Hello, and welcome to the Groovy Uncle podcast with me, Glenn Prangnell. In this episode, I'll be talking to musician and writer Mare Rozelle about a brand new project we've been working on together.
You're listening to the Groovy Uncle podcast.
A few months ago, I was invited by Mare Rozelle to write the music to some songs for a play she'd written called New York Letters. The songs were to be based upon the fictional letters written and received by John Lennon during the last few years of his life. The play was to be a musical imagining of the years 1972 to 1980, and Mare had written not only the play, but also the lyrics. All she needed was the music, which she asked me to provide, along with any other ideas and suggestions I might have. Now, I'd not worked on anything like this before, and being used to writing on my own, I have to admit, at first I wasn't sure if I could really commit to it. But I decided to give it a go. So I worked on a couple of demos which she liked. In fact, she liked them so much that she suggested we just plough right on with an album and think about the play later. Unusually for me, I wrote almost all of the songs on piano. Much to my surprise, it didn't actually take me that long to come up with enough songs for an album, and the next hurdle was how we were going to record and who was to be involved. So we enlisted the talents of Chuck Sabo on drums, Tom Morley on trumpet, Mare on backing vocals, and I did the rest. We were never in the same room together, it was all recorded remotely, but it was great fun. It's not a Groovy Uncle album, though. For this project, the band is called The Vague Ideas. But to get the full story, let's go over to the woman who came up with the whole idea, Mare Rozelle.
So, about 2019, early 2019, my sister-in-law called me and said that there's this man looking for me who says he's a former professor of mine from Berklee College of Music. And that would be John Stevens. And I said, oh, I wonder what he wants. So she gave me his number and I called him. And it turned out that he was looking for me because he had written a book where he analyzed all the John Lennon songs in the Beatles years. And he wanted to send me the book. And we started talking. And he said, you know, I have a dream. I want to write an opera. No, an opera, okay, about John Lennon's time in New York City. And I can't find anybody to be the librettist. And I write lyrics. So I said, well, you know, I write a lot of lyrics. I could give it a shot, but you have to make it a rock opera because I don't know anything about opera. And he said, yeah, that sounds great. So, we went back and forth for a while about, you know, what the concept would be because he didn't have a concept. He wanted me to come up with a concept. And every time I would come up with something, he would kind of come back with something like, oh, that sounds great, but can we make that film noir? And I was kind of like, no, we can't make that film noir anyway. So eventually, after all this back and forth, I thought, you know what? I just kind of need to like go off on my own, think about this, figure out what I want to do, because I can't start writing lyrics until I have a concept. So I kind of just stopped talking to him for a little while. And I was in the shower where I do my best thinking. And I thought, I have this book called The John Lennon Letters. And it's 300 pages, 400, I don't even know. I was like, that's what he did all the time. He wrote letters constantly, even if it was on the back of a cocktail napkin on an airplane or something, you know? So I thought, oh, that's it. You know, I could write songs that were actually him writing letters and also would show like his personal relationships with people, because that was really what he was about, you know, and just show his human side and kind of show his perspective of what was going on at that time. And just something more interesting than just, okay, so John moved to New York and then he did this and then he did this and then he did that, you know, that just gets really boring. I thought, well, you know, let's be a little more creative. So that's how that came about. My idea was I wanted to do a concept album, kind of like, you know, the Who's Tommy or something, you know, So all I did was I wrote lyrics for each section, for each letter. And then I sent it to him and I said, here's what I have. And I thought he's going to be like, no, that's not what I want. He was thrilled to pieces. He's like, yes, this is great. And I was like, good, I'm done. Right. Cause he wanted to compose the music. And then he's like, well, you know, he said, you can't just have a guy coming out with little round glasses on stage and starting to sing. They're not going to know that's John Lennon. And I laughed because I'm thinking, if it was a play about John Lennon and a guy came out on stage with little round wire glasses and started singing, I think they would know who it was. But he said, but you have to have dialogue. So then I had to start writing dialogue around all of that. And then I thought, oh, this is not a rock opera. This is becoming a musical. And I really don't like musicals that much. But it, you know, it worked. So by then it was 2020 and we'd gone into the pandemic, we'd gone into lockdown, and there was no way that I was going to be able to get people together to record any demos. There was no way I was going to be able to go to theater groups and be, you know, promoting anything. So, my husband and I have a studio. So we decided we would make three of the demos, not tell John and surprise him for his birthday, which was in September of that year of 2020. So I did that and I thought, this guy, he's either going to like this or he's going to be really mad that we went ahead without him and did this. But he was fine. So we had the three demos. I had the script, but we were still in lockdown. So there's really not a lot I could do. Then the next year came and we started to promote a little bit, but we only had three demos. And then I was walking a dog because that's what I do. I got a text from a number I didn't know. And it said, I'm sorry to tell you, but John passed away in his sleep last night. And I was like, what, who is this? And I realized it was his brother. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to have to start over. And I didn't want to waste everything I had already done. I said, well, what am I going to do? I want to do a concept album. Who do I know that's a genius songwriter whose music I love? And then I said, Glenn Pragnell. Then I got in touch with you and you were very kind. And you said, short answer, yes. And I was like, then I went and jumped around the house and screamed and, you know, it was great. So, and here we are.
And I was thinking, I don't know if I can do this, but I'll have a go. Because the thing is, if you've said yes, you'll do it, then you've got to do it. So let's talk a bit about the songs then. And so the album's going to be called New York Letters, and the band name is?
The Vague Ideas, which was your idea.
That was one of them. I mean, that's always the hardest thing to do, is to come up with a band name. I thought if it was a Groovy Uncle thing, it would just be too confusing. Let's just do it as a separate thing. And then it's its own thing then. So the Vague Ideas, New York Letters, track by track. It could be because we've done a running order. So we start, the album opens with NYC, which is a letter to Julia, John's mum, Julia.
So the original idea when I was writing this, and actually even when I was going back and forth with John Stevens, was that Julia would exist in this world. And she'd be sort of a muse kind of thing to John, and she'd just be around watching him kind of thing. So in the first track, John has moved to New York with Yoko. It's 1971, and he's really excited because he was really bored over in England, and he just felt New York was where all the excitement was, where everything was happening. And but he still misses his mother. And he, you know, like, you want to tell your mom, look at me now. What am I, you know, look what I'm doing. And so he does in the song. But kind of cool, Julia is there and she, you know, she answers him. I don't think he can hear her.
For anyone listening that doesn't know, of course, that John's mother, Julia, died when he was about 17. And she was killed in a road accident. So it's kind of the spirit of his mum in the song. And you do the vocals for that bit.
I do.
Hey, John, right here. That's where I'll always be.
But it's a good opener. It's good. It's a good one to open with. So track two, I had to go with, and this one is a letter to Cynthia, John's first wife.
When John and Yoko moved to New York and they got an apartment or a flat, Cynthia started to call quite often because she was concerned that John hadn't spoken to Julian in a long time. There had been no communication, been about 2 years. And so she kept calling, and it was annoying to John that she kept calling. He didn't really understand, I guess, that it was really just about Julian, but he felt that Cynthia had other ulterior motives, that she wanted him back. And so he wanted to write her a letter to say, you know, that's not going to happen. And I didn't really make that up, because he did write a letter in his letter book to her that said something like that. So I just made lyrics out of it, not from the actual letter, but what he might say to her in that context.
Yeah, and that's the thing we wanted to make clear to anyone listening, is that these songs are based on fictional letters written by John, so they're not his actual letters. It's all a kind of imagining of what he may have written. So the next track, Bread and Jam, which is a letter to his eldest son, Julian.
John loved Julian, and he started to feel a little guilty that he hadn't seen him. So he wanted to reassure him, and he wrote this letter. He mentioned some things that are specific just between he and Julian. And I mean, you'll see that. You'll hear that.
Yes, and it even has the reference to Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds in that, doesn't it? You know, the story of when Julian came home from school when he was about 4 years old and presented John with a drawing that he'd done. And John said, "What's that?" And Julian said, "Well, that's Lucy, his friend at school. That's a picture of Lucy in the sky with diamonds." And John thought, "Well, that's great. That's a good drawing, and it's a good song title." Okay, the next one we have is the first one that's a letter from, and this is a letter from John's aunt Mimi, and this song is called Always Good to Hear From You.
Mimi reminds me of Hyacinth's Bouquet, and so I kind of modeled what she was saying on what, you know, Hyacinth might sound like talking to John, but I took quotes that Mimi actually said to John, and I put them in there. And, you know, the thing about you'll never get anywhere playing guitar, you'll never make money at that. And also being like the doting, she's kind of a mother figure to him. So she was kind of doting over him and scolding him a bit. But at the beginning of the song, the reason that she writes to him is because she's heard what's going on in New York about some of the films that John and Yoko were making that were avant-garde films, but, you know, with naked people with flies crawling on them and all kinds of wacky things like that. And she's mortified. So she's embarrassed because all of these things are in the papers where she lives. And she's addressing that. Like, what are you doing? You're embarrassing me. So,
yeah.
And it's done in the style of music hall, which is great.
When you sent me those lyrics, I thought, you know, Mimi isn't going to be singing a rock and roll song. So it has to, I mean, I think we've already sort of decided that it's got to be something that's a little bit more from her kind of era, which is great because it still ties in with Beatles music, because they did one or two songs like When I'm 64
and Honey Pie.
Honey Pie and things like that. So it works on that level. But, of course, the other problem we had originally, we signed about it maybe being a duet between John and Mimi, but in the end decided to do it with just the male vocal, you know, John singing it, as though he's reading the letter out loud and kind of mocking it a bit, and, you know, which you can imagine him doing.
Reading the papers, all this shocking behaviour, houseflies, naked bottoms and drugs, there's talk from all the neighbours. You can't just sweep this under the rug. Don't bother with the papers, you'll get a case of the vapours. Reports are exaggerated, it's scientifically proven. Naked bums are overrated. Always good to hear from you.
Right, so the next song I really like, Nixon's Listening, which is A Letter to Tricky Dicky.
The whole time that John was here, well, not the entire time, but starting around, I believe, 1972, Nixon was going to be up for re-election. And he just felt that John was one of those pesky communists that was trying to keep him from being elected. That, oh, at the time, the voting age was going to be changed to 18. And Nixon was afraid that all the young people would listen to John and that he would, then Nixon would not be president anymore. So he had things taped in his house. I mean, he had devices put around to spy on him, and they wouldn't let him have a green card. And so because he could be deported very easily, he couldn't travel out of the country. He couldn't go visit England. It was very upsetting to him. He wouldn't be able to tour outside of the country. He got pretty upset. And in the actual play, I have Ringo Starr and Harry Nilsson coming to visit him. And they write this song, this letter to Nixon. They write it together. And it's very Harry Nilsson-ish at the beginning there.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. I mean, I was really trying to picture, I can imagine that scene where they get drunk and high and, you know, and writing a bit of a silly song about Nixon. And I can imagine, you know, Lennon thumping away on the piano or his guitar or whatever. Maybe Harry sitting at the piano. But I thought, how do you get Harry's identity in there as well? So I just thought he just needs one phrase in this. He can be doing backing vocals and, you know, tinkering around, but you need one phrase in there to be the, well, that's Harry. So that I just thought that 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue sort of crooning that. I thought, that's Harry. Prelude to the Lost Weekend, number 9.
in the script, I had written this almost like Shakespearean kind of passage. And I thought, you know, that would be really cool as a spoken word and, you know, have some percussion under it and who knows what else. If you remember, when I was still working with John, I got in touch with you and asked you if you would read that for me, if you record that for me as a spoken word, which you did. It was perfect. So now here we are. And so what it is John is having an argument with Yoko because Yoko is really not paying much attention to him and sleeping in her office overnight and just not really around for him. And so he's very upset. So he's expressing how upset he is with her. And that's the spoken word. But then you took it to another level. You can talk about.
Well, I mean, I like the idea of a spoken word thing. I've not done anything like that before. So, you know, in my little bit of, in quotes, acting, you know, it was a bit strange. But I just thought, I mean, we've got the drums on it. So it was a bit like one of those beat poems.
Am I a fixture? A still standing mixture of all that remains 10 years later, fastened to the floorboards. A rebellion that conforms. Why am I alone in my celebrity? Celebratory celibacy. No one to whisper my name in ecstatic clarity. Collectively split down the middle. I'm non-committal to this way of living anymore. A locked-tight stage door for this troubadour. This repressive deluding. What are we alluding? An omnipotent...
But I just thought it was a bit lonely, a bit isolated. I thought it needs something else. It needs something up, building up to it. So I thought, well, maybe I could attempt to do a kind of sound collage thing like a la Revolution Night, which I had a go at, and I was quite pleased with it. I thought, yeah, that'll do.
As Liverpool met Newcastle in the FA Cup final. Liverpool's Bill Shankly
and yesterday were two of the longest serving managers in the English game. And both have been successes in front of a 100,000 crowd.
Three bags full, sir.
Hock Mattel over 2 ten.
Underneath the arches.
This would be the
But it's also got a little bit of football commentary on there from the 1974 FA Cup final with Liverpool and Newcastle, which I thought was bang on the era we're looking at. So that sort of goes in with crowds cheering and the old lady talking, and it worked for me. I don't know what people make of it, but I like it.
It's fantastic.
Just lately, note to self, this is John talking to himself.
Right, and since this is a song that you wrote completely, you're going to have to explain it.
Well, this song, I don't really know where it came from because I wrote it a long time ago and I demoed it a long time ago. It's just a song that's a bit... I often sit down and play it or, you know, think, I must do something with that song. It's been sat around for a long time and I like it, but it never really fit in with any of the records I've made, so it's never made it onto an album. So it was just there... I'll use that at some time. I'll come back to that. I'll fix that. And so it was waiting for this project. So when I sent it to you, to said, how about this song? Do you want to use this? If you don't, that's no problem. I'll just put it back in its box again. But you really liked it, so we included it in the album.
Right. And the subject matter goes right along with John starting to be disillusioned with his relationship with Yoko.
Yeah.
So it just follows right along. It's perfect.
Okay, next we have Imaginary Girl, which is This Is a Letter to Yoko.
This is an epic song. So the song has three separate parts to it, which is how I remember sending you my version of it, which wasn't not nearly as good as your version, but it had the same three parts. So that's fantastic. So this is when John has gone to live with May Pang. And even though he's living with May, he's still constantly in contact with Yoko. And one night, kind of out of his mind, he's had too much to drink. And he wants to write a letter to Yoko, but instead he ends up calling her. But really, it's kind of a dream sequence, but really in the concept album, I guess it doesn't have to be a dream. So he's calling her to ask her to come, can he come home? Can he come back? But he's also venting at her as well. So he's kind of back and forth with, oh, please take me back. But also I'm pretty upset with you. So it's my favorite song on the album.
And the thing is, I like, because I did record the three things separately, which you can kind of hear. I mean, I fixed a few bits here and there to make it not sound too separate, but it's basically three things spliced together. But I like that. I like the fact that you can sort of hear, you can see the join, as it were.
That's exactly what I wanted. My imaginary girl.
Next up is My Pile of Dreams, Letter to May. Now, May is May Pang, who was John's secretary and girlfriend for a short while. She was employed by Yoko and instructed by Yoko to look after John. And they were together for a while in the mid-70s during his Lost Weekend period. And My Pile of Dreams is John's letter to May to tell her that he's returning to Yoko.
I'm not so sure that Yoko actually decided to take John back. I think that John just decided he would go back, if I have that correct. So one morning he decides he's going to leave and go back to the Dakota, and he leaves this letter for May, and it's a breakup letter, but it's also a love letter.
Next, we've got Something'll Happen, which is a letter from Paul McCartney.
Which is your other great contribution, all you, to this. So if you want to explain that.
Yeah, well, I think this was one of the first ones I sent over to you when we said about doing the project. I mean, initially you'd said about me writing the music to your lyrics, and then, which I was happy to do. But then once I started thinking more in depth about the play, I thought, actually, I should write a McCartney-esque song. I don't think there was anything in the script that alluded to Paul writing a letter. So I thought, maybe I should do a letter from Paul. So I started vamping away in that jolly McCartney way on the piano. And I remembered that one of their catchphrases or morale-boosting things they used to say to each other in the early days was something'll happen, you know, like when things were looking bleak or going wrong, they just go, don't worry, something'll happen. And McCartney's often told that story. So I thought, well, that's very McCartney, upbeat, something'll happen, you know. And to use it in this context, when he's been for a visit at the Dakota and it's gone well, and they've been reminiscing about, you remember when we used to say something'll happen? Do you remember when we used to ride on the bus in search of B7 guitar chord and all that? So that's all referenced in the song. So that's where that came from. And, you know, they talk about Klein. And the dynamite smoke is McCartney referred to a visit when he contacted John and said, I'll come over. I've got some dynamite weed and I'll come over for a visit. And Lennon used to refer to spending Beaujolais evenings together with McCartney. So all those things are referenced in the song. Something'll happen.
Man, it was great to see your face again. I think of you every now and then. Something'll happen soon.
The next one is Lullaby for Sean. So this first one that's not a kind of letter. And Sean was his son with Yoko. This one's called When You Turn Five.
Yeah. So John is Well, he can't really write a letter to Sean yet because Sean's only like a little baby at the time. But I figured he could write a lullaby to him. And so he's, I really, there's really not a lot I really need to say about this because, again, it's very self-explanatory. But he is singing a lullaby to Sean and talking about what they'll do together each year up until a certain year, up until a certain age, rather, like when you're one, we'll do this, and when you're two, we'll do that, and so on and so forth until he's five. And then I don't really have anything else to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, the music for that, we did it without drums, so it was just a piano and a little string arrangement thing. But I was just imagining, you know, some of those Lennon demos you hear at the Dakota, where he's just tinkling away on the piano, and, you know, I was just thinking it was one of those where he just, you know, trying to get the baby to sleep and just sat at the piano and wanted it to kind of sound like that.
Very powerful, I'd like to say. For a lullaby, it's very powerful.
Yeah, he was trying to capture that as well, because obviously it's loaded with sadness as well.
When you turn one, we'll watch the sun set at the edge of the pier. When you turn two, we'll go to the zoo and hide in an elephant's ear. Turn three, just you and me. We'll pretend we can travel through space. When you turn four, we'll sit on the floor and learn how to tie a shoelace.
Right, the next one, the last track, is No More Crying, which is a message to Paul. This is after John died.
Well, the story when I was writing the play is that Paul was in the studio writing Here Today, and he was going to play it back. But instead of Here Today coming through, there was a different song that was coming through, and that was this song. And it was John singing it to Paul to comfort him, because obviously Paul was grieving when he was writing Here Today. And that's another powerful song, a song that might make you cry when you listen to it, but also it's a very comforting song.
What I thought would be an obvious thing to try was, because this song's coming straight back after McCartney's recorded Here Today with that, you know, the famous opening acoustic guitar chord, I thought it'd be nice to have this song starting with the same couple of chords. That was my starting point. I thought, well, I don't know what I'm going to write, but it's going to start with that chord.
The other thing I wanted to say about the lyrics in that song is, you know, during the course of Paul and John's friendship, they would write songs that were actually messages or letters to each other.
Mm.
And so there's a lot of references in that song like that, to songs that they've written each other. And John's kind of answering some of that as well.
To my ears, I might be wrong, but this song is the most Beatly. So it's almost like it is almost like a reunion at the end, in a vague kind of way. Do you know what I mean? So not only are they communicating with each other, it sounds Beatly. It sounds right, I think.
It does. And also, in a lot of interviews, Paul will say, you know, sometimes I'm writing a song and I feel like John is saying, no, that's not right, you know, or, you know, he feels like he is still kind of in communication with John. He said that himself. And so that would make this not so strange.
Another man shows no affection. Another man don't cry. But if I
So there it is. That's the album. Something I did want to say was thanks to Chuck Sabo on drums and Tom Morley on trumpet, who recorded everything remotely at their own studios and helped us put all this together. So now the album's done and dusted. How do you feel about it?
I'm pretty excited. I mean, it is kind of the dream concept album that I wanted to make and couldn't have picked anybody better to make it with.
Oh, you could. I'm just cheap. I'm really pleased with it. I'm glad you're pleased with it. I think there's some good songs on there. It works for me. There's always the thing with anything Beatle connected is you don't know what sort of backlash you're going to get. So you might get people horrified by it or what the hell. But I get it and you get it. And that's all that matters.
Yeah. And it's a good story, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is for me, like, because I did the vocals, so essentially I'm being John, in a very loose way. It was trying to do it so it sounds like a Lennon song, or the couple that sound like McCartney's song. It's getting it right enough, but without it being a tribute act or a cartoon sounding thing. It was a bit of a tightrope. I don't know if I've got it right, but I think I have.
I think it's a good balance. I think that you did, yes.
Yeah, well done us.
Yay! I just hope people love it and enjoy it and get what we were trying to do.
Well, Mayor Roselle, thank you very much.
Thank you.
New York Letters by The Vague Ideas will be out on the Trouserphonic Records label in June 2022. You've been listening to the Groovy Uncle Podcast.